So we started Daf Gimel Amud Aleph. And maybe we'll be able to close the doors and we'll get a little bit more more quiet.
Thought, which I'll leave with you. I could see coming in Sunday, perhaps, to go over the Slichas of Yom Kippur, it's short, and to give the Tzibur 20 minutes, half an hour, to go over what is Gush Etzion.
Excellent.
That might be something.
Okay, let me. I'll just finish this year. But it sounds like a great idea.
Make sure you have the phone numbers handy. Your card.
Israeli
phone numbers.
Right. Excellent.
If you're not by Meyer's group, maybe not your group, you know what I mean?
Right. Okay. So we're on Daf Gimel Amud Aleph. And the Gemara is trying to find a justification for the Shvua of our Mishnah in the case of Shnayim Oksim Talis. And the Gemara says the following, that we have a serious problem with regard to our Mishnah because of Simchus. If we want to somehow square our Mishnah with Simchus, Simchus, if you remember, holds that Mamun Abutal B'Safik Cholkin B'Low Shvur, that anytime we have an objective Safik, and at the end of the day we don't know exactly how to rule, then what we do is we do a Yachlok, we split it up. We do damage control, so to speak. And as a result, we don't require a Shvur. So we're up to Afilu Tema. Let's see if we could find the words Afilu Tema. I would say it's should be on line 4. The last word on line 4 is Afilu. Am I correct? On Daf Gimel Amud Aleph. Afilu Tema Sumchus. There's no contradiction between our Mishnah and Sumchus. And why is that? Because Shvua Zu Midrabbanan hi. It means that this Shvua is not a Shvua of Safek, because again, according to Sumchus, there is no such entity as a Shvua of Safek, because in the case of Safek, we're going to say Yachlok without a Shvua, but rather it's a Shvua Dirabbanan. Dirabbanan felt at some point in history and time there was a need for a special enactment of a Shvua. And that rabbinic Shvua is something that even Simchus could buy into. Kidder Rabbi Yochanan. We're looking for some sort of proof to establish that the Shvua in our Mishnah is not a Shvua that's mandated by the Torah itself. And that we learn from Rabbi Yochanan. The Omer Rabbi Yochanan, Shvua Zu, Takonas Chachamim Hi. This is a rabbinic shvua, and why was it instituted by the Rabbanu? What motivated them to enact this shvua? Kidei, again, I'm adding that word. Kidei shelo yehi kol echad v'echad holech v'tokev taliso shel chavero v'omer shelihu. Because if you're going to say yachloku below shvua in every case of shnayim ochzin, then you're opening up a Pandora's box. You're opening up a very dangerous window of opportunity for any ganav to just simply grab onto something that someone else is holding on to. I mean, to be oches betaliso shel chavero, and as a result, since he's going to, this person who grabs onto your talis is going to say kula shali, I picked it up. We're going to say yachlok, and in that case, you know, the ganav ends up getting 50% of the profits over here. So there's a great temptation to steal something in a very easy way. You know, just like grabbing onto something. I don't have to necessarily enter into your house and steal from you and burglarize you with all the dangers involved. I could just grab onto your talis. You know, you're about to put on your talis or put it away. I'm just going to grab onto it. And now we're both holding on to the same talus, each one claiming Kula Shali. And then we're going to have to split the talus. So is there some sort of deterrent? And that's what the Rabbanan did. They instituted a Shavuah as a deterrent, because now Rabbi Yochanan is holding that Choshed Avamono lo Choshed HaShavuasa. Rav Papa, if you remember, which we studied back on Daf Beis, he was of the opinion that the only way we could justify a Shavuah is through what's called Horas Heter. And that means that we're not talking about an absolute extreme Ganov, because in such a case where Papa holds, the Shavuah would be meaningless. There's got to be some sort of at least a quasi-psychological justification in his mind of what he's doing, and then the Shavuah might be a deterrent, and instead of going ahead with his lie and his fabrication of the truth, he'll admit the truth. But we're not talking about an absolute outright ganav who sticks his hand into your pocket or grabs onto your talus. That was the Shita Rav Papa. Now we're up to the Shita Rav Yochanan. And Rav Yochanan is willing to accept a shvuah that's being imposed on an outright ganav. He's literally grabbing onto your talus, claiming it's his. He's a thief. But Choshed HaMamona lo Choshed HaShavuasa. He would not take an oath and perjure himself under oath. That far he won't go. He's not so much afraid of Gneva as he is afraid of a false oath. Now I want to add a little bit of a drushy comment over here. Al pi derech hadrush. So don't take this seriously, bless you. But it's kind of like an Erev Yom Kippur drusha on this Gemara. A person who takes a shvuah, let's say this thief would go ahead and take the shvuah, what does he stand to lose? Let's say evidence would come into Beis Din at some later point after he took the shvuah, and that would indicate clearly that he had stolen someone else's talus. He's very embarrassed about that. He's humiliated in the fact that he took a shvuah, he took an oath, and he was proven to be a nishbal sheker. He took a false oath. That's going to really ruin his reputation. So he's afraid, not because he's such a religious guy. Oh no, how could I take a false oath? And the Gemara says that this is one of the averis where you don't even achieve kapar and yom kippurim. You know, you need misa to be mechaper for taking a false oath with the name of God and so forth. That doesn't shter him. That doesn't mitigate his situation. What mitigates him is that the shvuah is taken in front of a Beis Din. Anybody can come into the Beis Din. You know, we invite the public. And he takes the shvuah, and then a week later, two witnesses come in to testify that we saw that he grabbed onto this talus, that he stole it. Why isn't he afraid of stealing something? Because a ganav does it stealthily. And he thinks that no one's watching him, and therefore he can get away with it. Now, you and I know that the founder of the Muslim movement was Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter tells the following story. He was traveling with a wagon traveler, a wagon driver, what we call a balagola. And all of a sudden, when they passed a farm, the balagola on his road stopped. And he got off the wagon and he turns to Rabbi Yisrael, who's sitting in the wagon, and he says, "Do me a favor. If anyone's looking at me, please yell and scream." And he goes ahead into the farm a few feet later, and he starts stealing hay, bales of hay, and he wants to pile it up. So Rabbi Yisrael starts yelling, "They're looking at him." And this goes on three times. And Rabbi Yisrael says, and the balagol says, "No one's looking at me." Ah, they're looking at you from Shamayim. You see, the Ganav is not afraid of Shamayim. He's afraid of other people looking at him. So maybe when it comes to the Shavuah, you know, that'll deter him, because he knows that the Shavuah is public in nature, and people might find out later on that he perjured himself. And at least in the eyes of the people, that's a terrible, terrible avera. Yeah, it's worse than stealing something. Okay, now we're going to return to our basic plan, the basic structure of the Gemara Bava Metzia at the beginning of the Masechta, and that is, who is the author of our mission? So we've gotten to the point we were able to square our Mishnah even with Simchas. That was a major undertaking that required us to completely shift our understanding of Chashad HaMamona, Chashad HaShvuasa, and to introduce a Shvu D'Rabbanan in the case of Shnai Moksa Metalis of Rabbi Yochanan. Now the Gemara is going back to square one. And this is the famous Sugya of Mana Shlishi. The Mishnah later on Daf Lamed Zayin, records a machlokus between the Chachom and Rabbi Yossi about Mana Shlishi. So we have two mafkidim, and they deposit their money in the hands of a nifkad. The nifkad is the third person. Now, what did the nifkad receive? How much money? He received from one of them one mana. He received from the other one two manas, which is 200. And now he doesn't remember which of the two mafkidim deposited that extra mana. Each one of the mafkidim is claiming it was my money. And now the chachamim say, well, in one mana times two, we have no question. The only machlokus is really going to be about the mana shlishi. So let's award each one of these two tovim, each one of the two mafkidim, with one mana. What do we do with the third mana? Yemunach hachiyavo Eliyo. Rabbi Yossi goes a step further. And he says, that's not going to cut the mustard. That's not going to be enough. Our goal is to have one of these two mafkidim admit that he's a rami, that he was fooling us, and he had lied. The only way of achieving that goal is if we confiscate all three manos, and therefore, what we're going to do is imkain ma yafsid rami. We're going to apply the principle of imkain ma yafsid rami. What's the principle of imkain ma yafsid rami, which is again formulated by Rabbi Yossi? We're going to have to guarantee that there's motivation, that there's a motivating factor that's going to bring the Rami to admit and confess. What's that? We're going to confiscate even his mana. His mana is also going to be locked up in escrow. Ah, now he's going to say, woo, not only didn't I achieve my goal of getting the extra mana by fabricating the truth, I even lost my own mana, which is really mine. And that's going to bring him to the point in which he does tshuva, if we talk about Aseres Meitshuvim, to the point in which he admits that he only gets one mana. Lema masnisin delo kirav Yossi. The Gemara thinks now that our mission of Shnai Moksa Metalis is against Rabbi Yossi. Why? Because one of these two people grabbed onto the talis illegally, and he's a rami. Well, the only way that you can get this rami to confess the truth is if you apply the principle of yeimunach. Again, I don't know exactly what yeimunach is going to achieve over here in this case. We'll have to see. But let's go through the Gemara at least on a superficial level, and then we'll try to analyze the Gemara on a deeper level. The Gemara says, Lema masnisin de lo kirab Yossi, de ikirab Yossi ha'omar, imkain ma hifsid ramai. In other words, it's not enough to lock up the third mana and give each one of the Bali Dinim one mana, which is the Chachomim Shita, but rather, ela kol yeimunach ad sheyavo lovi, even the first mana will be withheld until Elio comes, and that's going to motivate the Ramai. He's going to scratch his head and say, well, I don't want to lose a mana. It really makes sense for me financially to confess that I only own one mana, and the third mana is not mine. Now, how do we see in our Mishnah that our Mishnah rejects or contradicts Rabbi Yossi? So in order to answer that question, we're going to look at Tosfos, Dibra Maschil Ma. Now, if you take a look back on Daf Beis Amid Beis, we have two Tosfos in that start with the word Uma. And then we have a Tosus at the beginning of the Masechta on the base of an Aleph, V'yachloku. So these are the pieces of the puzzle that we want to try to put together. Let's start with Tosfos on the base of base Divrei Maskil Ma. The Gemara tries to present a contradiction between Sumchus and our Mishnah of Yachloku B'Shvua. And Tosfos asks the following question. Why does the Gemara ask this question, raise this objection, and insist that Sumchus would reject the Shvua? Says Tosfos, because Drora de Mamona is not the way Rashi interprets it, Chisaron Mamon, but rather below Tani Yosem Yesh Sofek Lebezdin. So for example, the case of Shor Shanok HaSapora, as we discussed at great length yesterday, we're talking about a Sofek that exists in Bezdin. Was the Vlad killed by the Shor Shanogach, or did it die for some other reason? It has nothing to do with the Negicha. In fact, the Shor was already born before the Negicha. So we'll never know the answer to that question. That's an objective Sofek in Bezdin, even before the Titus of the Balei Dina. And the Gemara thinks the following, that if in Shor Shanogach Sapara there's a Drora de Mamona, which means that there's a Sofek in Bezdin without that Titus, this is ample reason to be Mechayev Shvua, which again Sumchus is going to reject. But we understand the urgent nature or press or push, I should say, for a Shvua. And why is that? Because this is a case of Drora de Mamona. And if in Drora de Mamona, where there's a real push for a Shvua, because we really have a suffix on behalf of each, you know, tipping the scale in both directions on behalf of the two, you know, the two Balei Dinim, the owner of the Shor, Hamazik, and the Niza. And we should really require a Shvua in order to take money out of the hands of one of these two individuals. Let's say in the case of the Mazik, we're going to take half the value of the Vlad, and he's going to have to pay out of pocket for half that value. The Afal Pichen, nevertheless, Tosfos says, Sover Sumchus Shachloku Blo Shvua. Kal v'chomer, much more so, in the case of a Talis, Sumchus would certainly say Yachloku Blo Shvua. Why? Because Ein Vadai Li'echad Me'em. We don't even have a definite case that one of the two really has a claim. Ein Vadai She'echad Me'em Ramai. I'm sorry. I jumped the gun a little bit. He says that how much more so in the case of Shnayim Ochsin V'Talis, should there be no Shvua, should Sumchus drop the requirement of a Shvua? Why is it Kalvachomer? Because in the case of Talis, it could very well be that they both picked up the Talis simultaneously, and there's no Vadai that someone is cheating someone else. And in that case, for sure we could do away with the Shvua. In other words, Sumchus's conviction, his advocacy of Yachloku Beli Shvua is so powerful that even in the case where we know that we're taking money out of someone's hands and forcing him to pay, even though he has an excellent claim to be potur, to be exempt from this compensation. Why? Because even below Tani Yosem Yeh Sofik Lebezin, even before the Mazik, the owner of the Shor, opened his mouth, we already thought that maybe the Leda of the Vlad took place before the Negicha. We don't know. And therefore we have a very strong inclination to support the position of the Shor Mazik, the owner of the Shor Mazik. And yet, nevertheless, despite the fact that he really has a strong claim that you're taking money out of my possession, Shalom Kedin, I wasn't responsible for the death of the Vlad. No, we're going to say Yachloku. And we're not even going to require Shvuah. We're going really all out here. I mean, this is a very dangerous situation that Beis Din is actively involved in forcing the Bala Mazik, the Bala Shor, to cough up 50% of the damages when it's quite possible. And we had this suffix even before we entered into Beis Din, that the Baal HaShor Mazik doesn't have to pay anything. So there's a taina on the Nizak, and he comes into Beis Din, he says, again we're going now with Bari Bari, that I know that the animal was killed by this Negicha. At least require a Shvuah. Is how much more so in the case where it's very possible that each one is getting the half of the talus that's really magialo, you know, that he should be getting because they both picked up the talus simultaneously, how much more so would Sukkos drop the requirement of the Shvuah? Okay. Now let's talk about in Cain Ma Hifsid Ram. Now this is the Tosfos back at the beginning of the Masechet. Tosfos asks the following question. What is the basis for the Gemara's analogy between Yehi Munach HaTshiyov Elio in the case of Mana Shlishi and Shnayim Oksim Vitalis Yachloku? Says Tosfos, in the case of Yachloku, it makes sense that we should split the Talis because in truth, there is a possibility that both own the talus and they're both holding on to the talus. It's not like the case of Ahu Arva, which is very possible that, you know, this boat is owned by Reuven or by Shimon, and there we say Kol D'Olam Gobar. We're not going to impose or apply the principle of Yachloku, but in the case of Mitzia, of Shnayim Oksim Vitalis, they're going to impose a Yachloku situation because each one of the two Bali Dinim, Reuven or Shimon, is holding on to half the Talis. And Tosfos goes very far, if you recall, it generates a Chazoka Koma that Anan Sadi, we really have a Vada here that which he's holding on to is his. But in the case of Mona Shlishi, Where's the ochaz in here? You know, we're sort of like going back to maybe called the Olam Govar of Ahu Arva, but it's not the case of a Mitzia, Shnayim Oksim Vitalis, where they're both holding on, and each Musakus testifies on his behalf on half the Talis. So Tosfos says, Halo Vitalis, Shnayim Oksim Vitalis. And that's why we apply the principle of Yachloku, as opposed to Kol Yom Gover, where no one is ochazin in the case of Ahu Arva. Avol says Tosfos b'mona shlishi ein shnei mukzokin. Who's holding on to the mona shlishi? The nifkat. Why should the Gemara assume that in this case we should say yachloku? So Tosfos says that it's as if they're both holding on to it. Why? Because the Nifkat is holding on to it on their behalf. Kevon Shah Nifkat Muchzak Bishvil Echad Mehem, meaning the Nifkat, who's the third person, he's holding on to it on behalf of one of these two people, whoever actually gave them on a Shlishi. The Eino Yodea Bishvil Ezim, he doesn't remember who, on whose behalf is he. Is he holding on to the Mona Shlishi? Is HaRezek Iu Shneim Ochzim B'Mona Shlishi? It's very strange, because on the one hand, Tosfos admits that the Nifkat is holding on to the Mona Shlishi on behalf of one of them. But on the other hand, Tosfos insists that this is considered like Shneim Ochzim. This is paradoxical. HaNifkad Muchzak Bishvil Echad Mehem, he doesn't remember which one, HaRezek Ki'ilu Shneim Ochzim B'mona, he's holding on to it on behalf of one of them, and yet Tosfos says, and this is the underlying premise of our Gemara to make this equation, that it's as if both of them are holding on to it, and therefore we're going to pass Kinyach Loku. and now we're against Rabbi Yossi, who says Yei Muna.
Do we assume that these two mafkidim were mafkid at the same time?
So that's going to be the sugya on Daf Lamed Zayin.
That each one basically trusted the other, and that now it's more
right.
It's
so their problem. Let's take a look on Daf Lamed Zayin for a moment. I don't know. Do you have Lamed Zayin?
Yes.
So if you can, I mean, you'll have to refresh my memory. It's been a long time since I learned Daf Lamed Zayin. Is that the third perek?
Yes.
Hamenia, right?
Hamafki.
Yeah, Elu Metzias Hamafki.
This is Kodem Metzias.
So do you see on Daf Lamed Zayin, the Gemara raises your question?
Amud Aleph.
I think it's on Amud Aleph.
There's a Mishnah. The Mishnah deals with this case.
With Bona Shlishi, correct?
Yeah, right.
But is there any Gemara on the Daf? Maybe
yeah,
it's on Omid.
Yeah.
It was Gemara saying.
Okay. Amo Mistake Makinum Mamona below Arminan Uki Mamona Bakes Kat Mare. Rimini, Shnaim Shekin, Wait of the Hat, Zeman of Zematayim, Zelmer Shali Matayim, Zelmer Shali Matayim, and Lotayim.
Right, so if you can, you know, skip to the Gemara's answer, because that's where the Gemara, I think, addresses your question.
Oh,
Shnei Krichos, correct?
Yeah, the Havalei the Medak, the Havalei the Medak,
and Seifa.
Who should have been?
Okay, that's another question. Let's leave that out. Everything is a sugya.
Nasa Kamishi of Kilu Lo de
Kerach Echad. Okay.
The Lo Havalei the Medak.
Right, because Kerach Echad.
So it's the Shomer. The
right.
Shomer
that's
doesn't
true.
Have to pay attention.
That's true, but the distinction between Kerach Echad and Shnei Krochim is a distinction between a partnership kind of agreement in which they trusted one and the other, as opposed to two separate independent mafkidim that happened to have been mafkid in the hands of the same nifka.
Yeah, I mean, how else would he know that the other guy gave 200 if they didn't do it at the same time?
But which one is the Hasam and the Hochat, right? I just want to make sure.
There's a ratio and a
seifa. Oh, ratio and seifa. Which one is the ratio?
Ratio nasa k'mishiv kivu lo b'shnei krichot. The havalei lameda.
Right. But which is the ratio? That's just. Is the ratio?
The ratio is when they came separate.
No. The Gemara is trying to reconcile ratio and seifa with an ukimta of when they the ratio is when they came separately. The seifa is when they came together. Which is the ratio? Which is the seifa? That's what you have to.
Back in the Mishnah. You mean?
Yeah, because the Gemara is trying to reconcile the Reisha and the Sefer. Just in case, you know, it might be relevant to our sugi here. Is the case of Mana Shlishi a case of Hefkidu Bekerach Echad or Vishtei Krichos?
I don't know.
All right, so let's leave that out for the time being, but that's your question is being addressed in the Gemara itself. I don't know if we're going to do that today. If you like, write me an email and I'll try to do it for next week. Now let's go back to our sugya. The Gemara is assuming that our mission is against Rabbi Yossi, which implies that our mission is a perfect match with the Chachamim, the Rabbanan of Rabbi Yossi. So the Gemara says the following, very similar to the structure we had by Sufis. Ela, my Rabbanan came on the Amri Rabbanan Hashar Yehi Munachat Shiyov Elio Hanami Kishar Dami Disveikahi. Meaning, what did you gain by introducing the machlokas between the Chachamim and Rabbi Yossi, as if to imply our Mishnah Bishlema could work out according to the Chachamim and Rabbi Yossi? It's only a problem for Rabbi Yossi. Even the Chachamim say Yehi Munachat Shiyov Elio. The entire machlokas here between the Chachamim and Rabbi Yossi is about whether we should apply Yehi Munach to all three manos, that's the sheet of Rabbi Yossi, or should we say, like the Chacham, give him a mana, that's Vade, there's no Safek. And the third mana, which is the mana of Safek, we should leave and lock up until Elio comes. Well, let's look at our Mishnah. Our Mishnah of Shnayim Oksim Talis means that the Talis itself is like the mana Shlishi. It's got a divin of a Safek. We don't know who owns the Talis. Well, if we don't know who owns the talis, we should apply the principle of Yei Munach HaShiyov Elio. In other words, I think what the Gemara means here, and I'm basing myself here on the Mardechai, see, there's a machlokus which showed him exactly what Yehi Munach means. What does Yehi Munach mean?
Nobody gets it.
So where is it? Is it on the moon? So some Rishonim say we leave it in the hands of the Nifkad. The Mordechai says no. We have to take it away from the Nifkad and lock it up in the Bezdin. Bezdin is required to hold on to it. And the Mordechai basically is saying to us that Bezdin has no right to leave Mammon, which belongs to one of two people, out there in the world. They now have the responsibility of Tzedek Tirdof. They're going to have to hold on to it. Again, how long are they going to have to wait? When are they able to determine who owns this Mana Shlishi? And what's the answer? Elio, they have to wait till Elijah. Remember the prophet Elijah, the good old holy prophet Elijah. They're going to have to wait until Elijah comes. But that's their responsibility. So the Gemara is saying that the same thing should apply to Shnai Mosu Vitalis. We should leave the talis in the hands of Bezdin. They have no right to say, well, let's split the talis, because they don't know who owns this talis, and that puts a tremendous onus and responsibility on their shoulders to clarify who owns this talis. And if they come to a deadlock and they have no answer to this question, then they have to leave the talis in escrow in the hands of Bezdin. That's called Yehimunach HaTshiyov Elio. I'm operating here with the Mordechai because I think it clarifies this sugya a lot better. Yehimunach Biad Bezdin HaTshiyov Elio. Whenever you have a suffix, Bezdin has to get involved. Now again, in the case of Ahu Arva, Bezdin could say Nem the Kop and Shlug the Mant. Bezdin has no reason whatsoever to motivate them or to obligate them to get involved in the boat. They could laissez-faire, leave it to the law of the jungle. Whoever is a strong guy, he'll take over this boat. Why? Because nobody has any proof. No one has any mukzakus. It's just a bunch of people are arguing over a boat that's docked in the dock at sea. Bezdin doesn't have to get involved. But in the case of the Nifkad, that I think this could shed a whole new light on Tosus, that Tosus says that the Nifkad is holding on to it on behalf of both of them. What it means is that Bezdin can't just say, well, we're going to split it in half, as they did in the case of Shnayim Oks and Vitalis. Why? Because this Mana Shlishi is being held on behalf of these two Mafkidim. Once it's being held on behalf of the two Mafkidim, Bezdin must get involved. They can't just be Masalik and raise their hands and say, Arimosius Yodi, I'm not getting involved. That they can do when there's no Mukzakus, like in the case of Svina. But in the case where there is Mukzakus on behalf of two people, they have to get involved. So what do? Well, what they should do is they should adduce some evidence. There are two claims, a claim and a counter claim, who's telling the truth, and let's support that claim with Aiden, with witnesses. But guess what? There are no witnesses. So what do they do in this case? They're going to wait until the ultimate decision will be made by whom? Elio HaNavi. That's the Gemara's kasha. That we should say here, even according to the Chachamim, Yehimunach HaTshiyov Elio. Here's where I understand Tosfos. That Tosfos says the underlying common denominator, the lowest common denominator that links these two cases of Mitzia and Mana Shlishi is that there's a Mukzakus on behalf of both of the Bali Dinim. What that means is that these Bali Dinim have a claim that's substantiated by the Mukzakus. Why? Because the Nifkad is holding on to this Mana Shlishi on behalf of both of them. Why is he holding on to behalf of both of them? Because he doesn't know, and therefore he has to assume that either one of them, right, and that's absolutely true, either one of them is the rightful owner of the Mana Shlishi. He has to hold it on behalf of both of them. Once he's holding it on behalf of them, Bezdin can no longer say, we're out of here. Go rack your brains and you figure it out. Beat each other up to the pulp. No. Bezdin can't do that, because there's already a Mukzakus here. And again, if we're assuming the Reisha, which this we have to learn, Lamed Zayin, is referring to the case of Kricha Achas, then I understand the Gemara even better, because if it's Kricha Achas, then really the Nifkad is holding on to the Mana Shlishi on behalf of both of them, literally, because they came as one Mafkid. That's called the Kricha Achas. But the bottom line is, the Gemara thinks that there's no way that Bezdin could just simply say Yachloku. What would justify Yachloku when there are two claimants, each one claims that he's being cheated by half the money or half the talents, because kula shalit. Give a person a chance to bring in his evidence if he wants to say kula shalit. Well, we waited a month, nothing happened. We're at a stalemate. So what should we do? Well, our Mishnah says yachloku, but I have news for you. The Mishnah on Daf Lamed Zayin says yemuna. And the cases are, for all intents and purposes, identical, because conceptually what you have here is a situation in which Beis Din cannot apply the principle of Kol B'Yalim Gavar and just be misalik themselves because of the mutual chazokas. We can't take it out of the hands of the Muksak in order to say Kol B'Yalim Gavar. We have to find some sort of resolution to the issue, which means we have to wait for a testimony to come in. And guess what? We don't have any testimonies. You know what we do? We leave the object or the funds in escrow in the courts. Again, don't ask me where they have storage room for this. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know if any of you have ever gone through the experience of downsizing. You know, in my age bracket, you know, a lot of people are downsizing. You know, they all right, you're too young for this, Yichiel. But you know, you got to the point where your children are getting married. Right, you're at that point, but they're not all married yet, right? And once they all pack out, you're left with you, your wife, and then the ghost. So what are you going to do in such a large apartment? So you downsize, correct? So if you want to downsize, then what do? You put everything in storage? That's going to cost you more than it's going to cost you to buy another apartment. That's how expensive storage space is. So I don't know, Yehmudach HaShiyom Elio, I don't know, according to the Mordechai, at what point will Beis Din say, you know, I got piles and piles of stuff that we're holding on because Mom and I went to the suffering. We don't have enough storage room in Beis Din. So I have to take up a contribution to expand the size of the Beis Din to allow for more storage room. But that seems to be the sheet of the Chachamim. Rabbi Yossi used this concept of storage as a method of getting the Rami to admit, so they confiscate those knas here. But the Chachamim say, Yehimunach HaTshiyom Elio, on the Mara Shlish. That's against our Mishnah. So Mara says, nay, the Chachamim would agree to our Mishnah. How is that so? Hi, Mai. But in the case of Talis, the Ikalamema de Travayuhu, Ami Rabbanon Palgi Bishvua. That's half the coin. The other half of the coin is Rabbi Yossi. But let's just go through this half. So we have a method of reconciling Mona Shlishi according to the Chachamim with our Mishnah of Yachloku B'Shvua. Why? Because the Gemara now makes an about face. The Rabbanon have a right within, they are licensed within the context of Beis Din, of Tzedek Tzedek Tirdov, to create a Psak of Yachloku. The exception to the rule is Mona Shlishi. Why? Because Mona Shlishi means that if we split the mana, someone is definitely a rami. Someone is definitely going to gain something. That's called a chaluka. Eino yechol lios emes. Devadai hai mana dechad minayhu. It definitely belongs to one of them. Now, if it definitely belongs to one of them, what is Beis Din doing? They're taking the money out of its mukzakus to split it. And they're definitely causing a situation where someone is going to lose money. That's called Devadei Hai Mana Dechad Binayuhu. So what are you doing? You're taking the money out of Mukzakus in order to make sure that what? That a Rami will be rewarded for his Ramos, and he's going to get half of this money illegally, illegitimately, without any proof, simply because he claims it's his. That's not within the license of a Beis Din. Beis Din is not licensed to take money out of Mukzakus in a situation where somebody is going to lose. Because Vadai Hai Mona Dechad Minayhu. There's no doubt in our minds that the third mona belongs to either Reuven or Shimon. And now when you split it, that's a violation of the rules of what Beis Din is allowed to do. Beis Din is not allowed to actively create a psak which guarantees that the liar is going to gain from their psak. Therefore, the best way of going, of doing this, is Yeimunach at Shiyoveliya.
The whole thing.
Right, but in the case of Talis, well, what do you mean the whole thing? We're talking about the Mana Shlishi.
You're only talking about the Mana Shlishi.
Yeah, okay, I just want to make sure, because sometimes when you say the whole thing, you're referring to Rav Yosef. Right. So we're going at Chachamim, and we're talking about the entire Mana Shlishi, and we cannot. We're between a rock and a hard place. To be masalik ourselves and say, let's take it out of the hands of the Nifka, this Mana Shlishi, and let them fight it over it, you know, the Choka jungle, that we can't do, because you can't take money out of Muxakus in order to just say, well, we're not going to paskin, we're going to just get non-involved. On the other hand, we can't say Yachloku because there's a Vadai Ramak. And that Yachloku by definition means that someone is going to be rewarded for his Ramos. That we can't do. However, in the case of Talis, here's where Yachloku comes to the fore. What conditions are met in the case of Yachloku? Number one, that there are Muxaku, right? Both of them are Muxaku, and therefore you can't say Kel Diom Gavar. But number two, that it's not Vadai, Dechad Minayihu, that there's a great, serious, or substantial statistical probability that it belongs to both of them, to Travayuhu. So in the case of the Travayuhu, Beis Din could get involved. What do they do? And this is the first category of the three in which Beis Din gets involved. Because again, in Kol Dilon Govar, non-involved. In Yeimunach, we're only involved to guarantee that Elio is going to come and he'll give us an answer. Only in the case of Shnayim Osim Betalis, which is Ikala Neymar de Travayuhu, then Beis Din is authorized and licensed to paskin yachloku, because they're not necessarily taking something out of the hands of a righteous person and putting it in, awarding it to a rama. They're not necessarily doing that. Each one has half the talis. That's the way it happened. They each grabbed on to half the talis, and they're going to each be rewarded with half the talis. But it means we'll sell the talis and split the money. The only thing that I'm missing here, Rabbi Yosef, if you could help me out, a piece of the puzzle, is what's the shvuah over here? Now that you've licensed yachloku as a valid method, where there are two people holding on to it, and each one has a chazok, and maybe they both own half, because they both picked it up at the same time, why do you add a shvuah to boot? Is this going to be the shvuah of Rabbi Yochanan? What's the language of Yochanan? Kadesh lo tehei kolecha holy for tokev talisa shel chavero? Is that what the Gemara has in mind, dear? I don't know. It says Yachloku palgi b'shvua. It doesn't sound like it's Rabbi Yochanan. So what's the palgi b'shvua over here? Again, the Gemara says, you see those two words, let's not fool ourselves. We may be rewarding the Rama here in the case of Shnayim Osim Betalis, and how much more so in the Mekach Umemka case, where we're throwing out the possibility that the Mocher Adas Makna for both of them, and we said that was very remote. But Ikol Amemer the Chavayuhu.
Remote is not the issue. The issue is that it's possible. Whereas in Mana Shlishi, it isn't possible.
So again, how does that justify the Shvu? Look at the Gemara. The Gemara says that here, Ika Lemeim de Travayahu is Amri Rabbanon Palgi. I would have stopped, quit while you're ahead. Leave out the Shvu. You want to discuss the Shvu? That's a sugya unto itself. Why a Shvu? Why did the Gemara feel compelled to inject the word Shvu here at this point? I couldn't find an answer in any of the Mefarshim. Because the real breakthrough here is that once we put Kol Diolam Gavar in one compartment and we wrapped it up, and we put Yeimunach in another compartment and we wrapped that up, let's wait for Elio. Now we're ready for Shnayim Ochsim. And now we're going to say Yachloku. Instead of wrapping it up with Kol Diolam Gavar, be Masalik yourself. Instead of wrapping it up with keep it in escrow until Elio comes. You're going to implement a psak called Yachloku. Great. That's really mind-boggling. This is trailblazing. Yachloku is a psak. And we're going to go on this possibility of Ikula Meimer de Chavayu. But why do you feel compelled to add the Shvuah to the equation?
We're using the Shvuah to discourage a person from lying.
Okay, that's what I told you, that maybe the Shvuah here is Rav Yochanan Shvuah, that we don't want to allow this person to get away with murder. But I'm just saying, I don't know why. You know, we had a whole long discussion in the context of Sukkos why the Mishnah was not satisfied with Yachloku and added a Shvuah to it. Are you adding anything by adding the word Shvuah here in this context? Our issue is not Shvuah, our issue is Yachloku. You've satisfactorily solved the issue of Yachloku. Why confuse me with the Shvuah? Yeah, Shvuah is a separate sugya. Like you say, where we want to give Horas Shah with Papa, that, you know, Horas Hete, that, you know, he's not losing anything. Or if we go with Rav Yochanan, it's a Gzeres Chachamim, Shalo Yehi Tokev Adam, Talisa Shchaver Rav Shaliyu. That's a sugya. And we can open up a sugya here about Shvuah, but this sugya of Rav Yossi and the Chachamim on a Shlishi is not about Shvuah. It's totally independent and irrelevant to Shvuah. What the Gemara is asking is that there's no room for Yachloku. Until the Gemara says there is a room for Yachloku, Sikil, maybe the Travayu. But Shvuah Mandakar Shmei. I mean, who asked you to remind me about the Shvuah? Sometimes call a Moshev Goreh if I remind you about something. Oh no, now you're gonna have to try to figure it all out. Well, who wants to figure out Shvuah? That's a headache. I couldn't figure that out. Okay, Rav Moshe. So, Beli Neder on Sunday, we'll finish this sugya Rav Yossi with Manashlishi. What I'd like to do with you now.